Good morning and welcome to the Yuma Sun. This is Marcia French, your volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today is Thursday, May 29th. Some of the articles I'm going to be sharing today are the weather, federal funds released for Cesar Chavez Boulevard expansion, state budget negotiations update, girls track and field athlete of the year, I have one obituary, and there'll be more. I'm going to start with the weather. Today, for Thursday, 97 degrees for the high, 70 for the low, mostly cloudy, 0% chance of rain, winds from the south-southeast at 11 miles per hour. For Friday, 100 degrees, 74 for the low, partly cloudy, winds from the south at 11 miles per hour. Saturday, 97 degrees for the high, 75 degrees for the low, partly cloudy, 10% chance of rain, winds from the south at 10 miles an hour. And Sunday, 89 degrees, 72 degrees for the low, partly cloudy, 17% chance of rain, winds from the south southeast at 12 miles per hour. On Monday, it's forecast to be 98 degrees for the high, sunny with a 1% chance of rain and winds from the south at 16 miles an hour. My first article today is portion of federal funds released for Cesar Chavez Boulevard expansion. This article is by Cesar Nayoy Bajo El Sol, May 27th. The bidding process for the Cesar Chavez Boulevard expansion project in San Luis is expected to open this fall, following some delays related to the release of funding allocated for the construction. Mayor Nieves Riddell confirmed this after a meeting held locally with officials from the Arizona Department of Transportation to follow up on the project. There were $25 million in federal funds that weren't moving. They would not say whether they'd release them or not. Fortunately, we've now received a letter confirming they are available, said Riddell. The bidding will open in the fall. We don't have enough funding to complete the entire project, but at least we can get started. The $25 million comes from a U.S. Department of Transportation grant for rural transportation, awarded specifically for the Boulevard expansion project. Riddell said they are working with Senators Mark Kelly and Ruben Gallego to secure the release of an additional $10 million in federal funds committed to the project and continue advocating for their allocation. We're short on resources to complete the project exactly as designed, but our representatives are helping us secure the rest. Construction is not an exact science. Costs rise quickly, and the longer we wait, the higher the total cost, she noted. In December, the City Council approved an intergovernmental agreement to coordinate with three Arizona Department of Transportation in carrying out the project, which is managed by the state agency and involves expanding the boulevard from two lanes to four. Riddell stated that bidding for the project is expected to be announced in September or October, and noted that the city has already invested about $10 million in preparation work for the expansion. City Manager Jenny Torres noted that the current estimated cost for the project is $62 million, while the available funds include $33 million in state legislative funds, $25 million from the federal grant, and $4 million contributed by the city. The mayors will participate on June 9th and 10th in a meeting of border mayors in Mexico City, where she plans to present the need for funding for infrastructure projects like this one, for hiring additional officers once the San Luis Port of Entry expansion is completed, as well as for the proposed opening of San Luis 2 commercial port to tourism traffic. My next article is from the state level. Arizona state budget negotiators face a fragile economy. This article is by Bob Christie from Capital Media Services, May 27th. Phoenix. With a hard deadline of just over a month before the Arizona government shuts down if a new state budget isn't enacted, Republican lawmakers and Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs, or at least her staff, are finally talking. The long delay in starting talks, despite the GOP-controlled legislature being in session for nearly 5 months, and the July 1st deadline, puts pressure on both sides to hammer out a deal quickly. Part of the issue, holding up the start of negotiations, has been talks about extending Proposition 123. The 2016 voter-approved ballot referral was designed to settle a lawsuit by schools over funding cuts by tapping about $300 million more a year from the state land trust created at statehood to mainly support public schools. It expires this year, but GOP lawmakers last week decided to wait until next year to send any Prop 123 extension to the voters. Part of that decision was because Republicans hope to include a constitutional change protecting the state's universal school voucher program in any extension. The legislature doesn't need Hobbs to okay the needed ballot referral, and she's opposed to vouchers in general. But a bigger reason for slow-walking budget talks has been uncertainty about state tax revenue. After starting the calendar year with an expected $612 million in new revenue, the legislature's budget analysis and a group of outside economists lowered that figure to $277 million in mid-April. The change was prompted by concern that new federal tariffs would affect consumer spending and related tax collections, and probable federal spending cuts by the Trump administration. Fears of a potential recession also contributed to the lower revenue estimate. Those changes resulted in a prediction for only a tiny surplus of 2% in the expected $17.6 billion budget for the coming year. Since then, concerns about tariffs have moderated slightly. Then April's tax collections numbers came in much higher than expected, $207 million higher, mainly due to a big increase in individual income tax payments. That news, released last week, gives some unexpected breathing room, although the legislature's budget analysts cautioned that budget negotiators should not count on that as ongoing revenue. That's because much of the higher income tax revenue was driven by a surge in capital gains as people locked in stock profits late last year before Trump took office. I think everybody understands where the economy is, the fragile nature of the economy, and then also the potential impacts from federal administration decisions, House Speaker Steve Montenegro said Tuesday. So I think we all understand that the numbers are flat here in Arizona, said the Goodyear Republican. We all see that there isn't a lot of room here. There isn't room for spending. Senator John Kavanaugh, Republican of Fountain Hills, said Friday that formal budget talks could begin this week, although as of Tuesday, none have been scheduled. Hobbs is looking at the looming deadline as well. We have started informal conversations this week, she said last Thursday, so I'm hopeful we can meet the 40-day deadline that's in front of us. That hard deadline keeps ticking away. As of Tuesday, just 34 days remain before a government shutdown if a budget isn't passed by the legislature and signed by the governor. Hobbs rolled out her proposed spending plan for the budget year that starts July 1st in January, but has been frustrated because GOP lawmakers have not presented any outline of their own priorities, other than rejecting for the third year her proposal to roll back the state universal school voucher program. The governor has been calling on the legislature to put out their plan for months and months and months, Slater said. Now we're down to the wire, and now we have to get something done. She released an updated version of that budget in early March that asked for nearly $50 million in supplemental funding to cover the ballooning cost of the voucher program for the balance of this fiscal year that ends June 30th. The program adopted in 2022 is now on track to cost $1 billion in the coming budget year, even as the governor has unsuccessfully pushed to cut its scope. She said last week that she's working toward a bipartisan budget deal. We're still looking at what priorities we can include that will get the votes we need to get a bipartisan budget, Hobbs said. Kavanaugh said GOP lawmakers are eyeing just over $250 million in new spending to split between the governor's office and Republican members of the House and the Senate, setting the revenue bar lower than many expected. Splitting the new revenue between the GOP and Democratic wish lists is a new tack that emerged for the first time after Hobbs took office in 2023 as the first non-Republican chief executive since Janet Napolitano left office in 2009. Kavanaugh said Senate Republicans will collectively get about $90 million to spend, with an identical amount divided up among House Republicans. Under that plan, Hobbs will also get $90 million, but minority Democrats in the House and Senate aren't included in Kavanaugh's spending math. The House, however, isn't on board with the Senate plan, according to Representative Matt Gress, Republican of Phoenix, who sits on the House Appropriations Committee. One of the challenges with the 90-90-90 plan is that there are several items in the executive budget that are the basic functioning of government, Gress said, like replacing air conditioning at prisons, repairing school buildings, or buying new state police vehicles. These are basic things that you've got to do as a government that cost a lot of money, Gress said. So when do the 90-90-90, it basically gives the executive $90 million to use on things that I think are the responsibility of all of us, the House, the Senate, and the governor. And that, he said, is wrong. The governor also has other executive initiatives, he said, things on her own wish list, just like the House and Senate Republicans. She'll blow through her $90 million in 2 seconds just on covering the basic costs of government, the things that Gress, who was budget director under former Governor Doug Ducey, should be the responsibility of the entire government. And Hobbs does have things she wants. Her January budget proposal included new spending that far exceeds what Kavanaugh said GOP lawmakers have earmarked, including $112 million in new general fund spending to provide child care subsidies for an additional 25,000 children. Subsidies help low-income Arizonans pay for child care so parents can work. She also wants nearly $50 million in new spending for college scholarships for potential nurses, teachers, and other groups, more money for the Housing Trust Fund that helps fund low-income homes and apartments, and money for a first-time homebuyer program, among other spending proposals. She also wants raises for prison guards and state police, and money to combat fentanyl smuggling and for border enforcement. Kavanaugh didn't specify any potential uses for the money he said Republican lawmakers want to use outside of normal spending increases, including in the budget baseline, and depositing money into a state employee health care fund and one for school building repairs. We want to take care of the baseline and basically divvy up $280 million three ways between the governor, the House, and the Senate, he said. The governor also wants to allocate $30 million for raises for state trooper and corrections officers, something Gress said is backed by House Republicans as well. Another concern is the state's Medicaid program that provides medical care for about a quarter of Arizona residents. Although the Arizona Health Care Cost Containment System, known as AHCCCS, has seen an 8% decrease in enrollment in the past year, those still on the program are sicker and cost more money. That means higher per person costs that the state has to pay the private insurers who manage the system. Add into that a boost in use for a relatively new program that pays parents to care for their seriously disabled children at home and Medicaid spending. So the Medicaid programs are a significant chunk of this new spending for the governor, and again, those have to be shared by all of us, Gress said. All of those needs and wants and many more go into a budget plan, and neither side will get everything they hope for out of a state budget, especially when money is fairly tight. But Gress said, with time running short, it's time for serious talk. Our lines of communication are open with the Senate and the executive, Gress said. We need to get this budget passed, and you do it by assembling the votes, he said. And you've seen two bipartisan budgets passed in fiscal years 24 and 25, and I would expect the same to be the case in 2026. Montenegro said the House is focused on public safety, ensuring the economy is sound, and individual rights, and he downplayed the differences in the budget plans being pushed by the Senate and the House, saying they will come together. "Ultimately, we are on the same page, and we will be on the same page," Montenegro said. Kavanaugh said he doesn't know when a budget will come together, but knows it must be within the remaining 34 days, or less, since Gress has a personal commitment that will mean he's not available after June 22nd. "Things could go quick or slow. It's fairly unpredictable," Kavanaugh said. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona and news from the Yuma Sun. My next article, the number of SLHS grads just shy of 600 students. The largest group of high school graduates in the county received their diplomas on Friday during the San Luis High School Class of 2025 ceremony. Cheered on by parents and family members, 598 students celebrated the completion of another stage in their academic journey and their transition to colleges and universities. The outgoing Sidewinders qualified for $11.3 million in scholarships, repeated as state champions in competing the FAFSA process, among other achievements, thanks to their academic performance and dedication. I'm going to move now to YCSO Foothills Substation, temporarily closed for the summer. This is by James Gilbert, a Sun staff writer, May 27th. The Yuma County Sheriff's Office Foothills Substation, located at 13190 East South Frontage Road, will temporarily close to the public for the summer, effective May 26th. The closure is due to a continued decline in walk-in traffic, a trend that has persisted in recent years, said Public Affairs Specialist Tanya Pavlock. She added that the sheriff's office anticipates even fewer in-person visits during the summer months. "We have seen very little foot traffic as of late and expect to have fewer walk-ins during the summer," Pavlock said. "It is just the administrative services that are being put on hold." While the substation will no longer offer walk-in administrative services for the time being, the closure does not affect East County patrol operations or emergency response capabilities. Deputies will continue working out of the Foothills location, and residents can still request a deputy to meet them at the substation or at their location if needed. All administrative services, such as process serving, public records requests, criminal records checks, vacation notifications, and payment of delinquent taxes, must now be requested at the YCSO main office, located at 141 South 3rd Avenue in Yuma. A majority of the services residents needed could be handled over the phone or online, Pavlak said. There is no set date for when the Foothills substation will reopen. As part of the transition, the substation's one full-time civilian employee will be reassigned to the main office, where officials say staffing resources can be better utilized. To file a report or for other non-emergency services, residents can contact YCSO Dispatch at 928-783-4427 or call 78-CRIME to remain anonymous. For emergencies, dial 911. Next, Summerton streets to be maintained and trail to be equipped. This article by Cesar Nayoy Bajo El Sol, May 27th. Summerton residents will soon see maintenance and infrastructure improvement activities under contracts totaling nearly $266,000, as approved May 20th by the City Council. Charles Gutierrez, Director of Public Works, presented to the council members a proposed contract with the firm Sunland Asphalt for the application of chip seal and fog seal for work scheduled in June. Additionally, the council approved the hiring of Safeline Arizona for new signage on the streets where their work will be carried out. The sealing and signage work will cover Jefferson Street between Summerton and Cesar Chavez Avenues, and the streets in the Las Estrellas subdivision, phases 4 and 5, all at a cost of $159,000 $841.93. Gutierrez stated that city officials decided to apply light ceiling across entire areas rather than focusing only on selected streets. He added that city personnel carried out preliminary tasks such as crack filling and pothole repairs on the streets that will undergo maintenance. In other action, the council approved a contract with Somerton Electric for the lighting of the Val del Sol Trail. The new street lighting will be installed along the pedestrian pathway that runs along County 17th Street between Bingham and Somerton Avenues. The approved contract cost is $105,788. This project continues Somerton's walking trail plan, which has been in development for several years. The obituary that I have today is for Jason Toby Nerva Jr. He was born February 28, 1989. He died May 14th of 2025. He was born and lived in Yuma. He's survived by his wife and their four children. A service will be held today, Thursday, May 29th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Yuma Mortuary, 755 South 5th Avenue, Yuma. Following will be a traditional service at the Keshan Big House, 1877 Pichacho Road, Winter Haven, California, from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Moving now to sports, the 2024-2025 Girls Track and Field Athlete of the Year, Maddie DeBow. This article is by Mac Friday, sports editor, May 27th. In just a few months, King's senior Maddie DeBow went from being the new kid at Kofa High School to one of its most decorated track and field athletes. A senior who transferred from Oregon due to her father's Marine Corps reassignment, DeBow didn't just adjust to life in a new school, she rewrote its record books. DeBow won the district championships in all three major throwing events, breaking the school records in discus and shot put. At the AIA State Championships, she finished second overall in the state of Arizona in the discus. For her accomplishments, DeBow has been named the 2024-25 Yuma Sun Yuma Rotary Club Girls Track and Field Athlete of the Year. DeBow's journey in track and field is as unconventional as it is inspiring. A lifelong basketball player, she was first introduced to track during her sophomore year when a sprints coach at a basketball game suggested she give it a try. "I tried all the events during rookie day, and I just happened to be the best at throwing," DeBow recalled. "I didn't know what was good and what wasn't. I was just excited to try something new." Throwing quickly became her athletic calling. Now, just 2 years later, she's breaking school records in discus and shot put. Her rapid development is a mix of natural talent, relentless self-discipline, and a love for the sport's unique energy. "I think I like track a little more than basketball now," she admitted. "The environment of track meets is just really fun. I get to hang out with teammates, watch different events, and still have that individual competition." Though she started late, DeBow has embraced the challenges that come with throwing, particularly in discus, her favorite event. "Discus is satisfying because it's hard to get perfect, but when you do, it's just a beautiful throw," she said. "It's more technical, and everything has to align just right." Her competitive mindset is rooted in internal motivation. "I like that it's both individual and team-based. You earn points for the team, but you're also chasing personal records just for yourself," she explained. "I can be really hard on myself, and I like that if I mess up, it's on me, not anyone else." With each meet, she's developed a unique pre-competition ritual. "I listen to the same music every time. I start with 60s love songs, move into R&B, and end with hip-hop and rap. The last song I always listen to before I compete is 'Till I Collapse' by Eminem," DeBow said, adding with a laugh, "I'm superstitious. I even wear silly socks. My favorite pair are Shrek socks from my teammate Adley." Behind the results, though, there's been frustration and growth. "Training is tough. I get frustrated easily," she admitted, "but I've learned to trust the process. You've got to learn to believe in what you do at practice. When meet day comes, it's about relaxing and trusting that work." That lesson was hard-earned but rewarding. One of the biggest payoffs of her year at COFA was on senior night, her chance to shine in front of a home crowd, and where she broke both a school discus and shot put records. It felt special because the whole team was there. It reminded me why I love this sport. Despite only spending part of a year at Yuma, DeBoe has left a lasting impression, not just through her performance, but through her character. I hope I'm remembered as someone who was kind to everyone. You never know what someone's going through, she said. DeBoe has already proven that with an open mind, a strong work ethic, and a pair of lucky socks, anything is possible, even rewriting school record books in less than a year. My final article here is Arizona's rural groundwater deal stalls as legislative session nears end. This article by Sayal Govindarao is from the Associated Press on May 27th. Phoenix, Arizona's governor and the GOP-controlled legislature are at odds over regulating groundwater pumping in the state's rural areas, and time is running out. Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs stood with local Republican leaders at the start of this year's session, optimistic that Republicans in the legislature would embrace her proposal to create rural groundwater management areas. But almost 4 months later, talks have stalled, and frustration has mounted on both sides as they try to find a solution to conserve water that's increasingly becoming more scarce amid a prolonged drought. Negotiators have not met since early April, Hobbs' office said. Around the same time, Republicans and some interest groups grew frustrated with a separate proposal by the Arizona Department of Water Resources to slash overdraft in the Wilcox Basin by a percentage that is unattainable, said Senator Tim Dunn, one of the Republican negotiators. Overdraft refers to when groundwater extraction exceeds what is being replenished. Hobbs has said that if lawmakers adjourn, typically in the summer, with no deal, she will take matters into her own hands. Water basins in rural Arizona are largely unregulated, and Democrats and Republicans have different visions on how to slow depletions. Negotiators, including staff from the governor's office and bipartisan lawmakers, have clashed over proposed mandates for reducing groundwater pumping from aquifers. Republicans who introduced their own plan say the one from Democrats is too high. Democrats say the GOP proposal isn't high enough. So I'm going to have to end this here. The article continues, but my time has run out. I just want to say I've enjoyed my time with you. The Journal is next.